Hey guys,
Veronica,
Andrew,
and Nate here. We are
Foodies Watching Movies,
a podcast dedicated to
awesome movies,
great food,
and that's about it.
Check us out on the JIC Network at www.journeyintocomics.com.
Maybe throw some money over to our Patreon
so we can eat this week.
And now, your feature presentation.
The following is a Journey into Comics Network production.
Hey, this is Josh Richmond, and you are listening to the Voice of Survival podcast, exclusively on the Journey into Comics Network.
You're listening to the Voice of Survival podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Nate Phillips.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special Voice of Survival podcast. As the introduction said, I'm Nate. And today, I, like I said, have a very special thing going on. I want to immediately introduce my guest at this time, Justin Corbett. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Nate. How are you?
Oh, doing really good, man. I feel like it's been forever since we've talked, because I had you guys on Journey into Comics a while back. Schedules get very crazy, as we were just talking about, and it's good that we're finally going to catch up today.
Yeah, I agree. We tried to be on each other's shows a few times, but it just never seems to work out.
I feel like that, like with podcasting and music as well, it's just like you're always two ships sailing in the night.
And yeah, that's very true.
If you can get lucky and harbor at the same place, it's great. But the likelihood that that's going to happen is very slim. So today, Justin, just to give our audience a brief summary of kind of who you are as a person, you're a podcaster, you host Mind Fudge Comedy Podcast. You also are a host on the Horror Geek Life.
It's the Horror Geek Podcast.
Horror Geek Podcast.
HorrorGeekLife.com.
Thank you very much. You also are the owner of Gray Bear Comics. You've written Speak No Evil, the comic book. You have your irons in all kinds of fires. I feel like you're like one of the busiest podcasters I know. So
try to be.
I want to know. Because as I said, and I always tell my listeners, it's always about the person that I'm interviewing. So today, I want to jump in, and where I really want to start with your journey in your life is, where does podcasting actually begin for you? Like, who did you first listen to? Where does the inspiration start? Because I always feel like, at least for me, when I first started podcasting, I was listening to other podcasters, and that gave me like the, I don't know if courage is the word, but it gave me like the inspiration to go, I'm going to go do this now.
Well, I always tell people that Tell 'Em Steve Dave was the first show that really mattered to me and really got me into it. But the more I think about it, the more that's not really true. I had a friend who turned me on to Dig Nation way back in the day. And I used to watch Dig Nation. I used to watch the Totally Rad show, especially when I was like traveling for different tournaments and things like that, because I used to be a competitive gamer as well. So I spent a lot of time watching those shows. And technically, those were podcasts. They were just video shows. And you know, the first audio show that I really got into was Tell 'Em Steve Dave. And I think that that is the show that has shaped my podcasting style more than any other. That three-person, free-form banter with, like, brief segments mixed in. But I like their sense of humor a lot. And really, Kevin Smith and the Tell 'Em Steve Dave guys are the biggest reason that I got into this.
Yeah, man, Kevin Smith is also a huge inspiration for myself and a lot of people within the JIC network, so I totally get where that comes from. Now, what's your first venture into doing your own show when the inspiration of podcasting hits you?
Well, it was when we started Comical Podcast almost 5 years ago. That was just something I wanted to do. I was listening to Tell 'Em Steve Dave for the second time, because I'd listened to, at that time, I think it was about 168 episodes or something. I'd listened to the entire catalog twice, and then I was like, okay, I finally think I understand this. I finally think I understand what I need to do to make a good show. And I approached, at that time, my coworker Miguel, who was also super into comic books, about possibly doing this. And at first he was reluctant. He's like, I'm not funny. Nobody would want to listen to me, whatever. And what ended up happening is I just bought the equipment and was like, look, I invested all this money. We're going to do it.
Forced him into the position you needed him to be. Like, look, right. This is how we're doing it.
It worked out. It worked out well.
Yeah. And I think that you guys had a great chemistry together, you know, and now you're doing Mind Fudge. And it's weird because I'm a fan of that show. So it's like I feel like I have bits of knowledge of you, but it's only like pseudo knowledge because you guys don't always like go super deep into detail. Like I do. You play Magic, right? Or played?
I used to go
to tournaments?
Well, I used to play on the Pro Tour.
Oh, that's
I was on
incredible.
Pro Tour for about a year and a half. Yeah, I did pretty well. I finished 9th in San Diego. That was my best finish.
Man.
yeah.
I was always one of those weird kids who I couldn't play Magic, but I was so obsessed with the art of the cards that I would just collect them sporadically, you know? And then like years later, I went through, I'm like cleaning up my dad's house, and I was like, holy shit, look at all these weird Magic cards. I don't know how the fuck to do with them. So I just got
a lot
like,
of them are. A lot of them are worth money, especially if you like collected back when you were middle school and stuff. Some of that stuff is worth a ton now, so I'd look into selling it if you want to just get rid of it.
Oh, well, I probably need to go through them and actually see what I have then. So you start... Okay, so let's go. We got to kind of get ourselves in order here. You're doing Comical Podcast. How long did that go for? You said nearly 5 years.
I've been podcasting 4 or 5 years. That show ran for about 3 years.
Okay. And how many episodes did you guys go through?
I believe it was 138 or 139.
Awesome.
We didn't miss a lot of weeks. We probably missed maybe 7 or 8 weeks through the entirety of the show. We really tried to keep to a strict schedule. And, you know, we only missed like 7 or 8, like I said, over the whole course of the 3 years.
Awesome. And now, I do believe, correct me if I'm wrong here, you started Mind Fudge before the Comical ended, or was it about the exact same time, kinda?
No, Comical just sort of met a natural end. It's very expensive to read every comic that comes out, and Miguel and I were pumping hundreds of dollars every week into getting all the books. You know, we had different sponsors at different times, but none of them would stick around long enough to keep our habit going, and it became extremely time-consuming because we'd have to read, you know, 70, 80 books a week and then review them and then figure out what the best ones were so we could talk about them and keep up with the news and plan out our segments and come up with funny stories. And there was just so much that went into Comical. It was a very involved show. And like I said, it just sort of met a natural end. Like, it got to the point where neither one of us had the time to do it anymore. So he moved on to Critical Thinking Podcast, which is him and his cousin and two of their close friends, and they're very laid-back, free-form kind of show. And then there was about a four-month period where I wasn't really podcasting, at least not my own shows. I would go as a guest on different shows around Houston. A lot of people wanted me to set in, which it was fun. It was a lot of fun just kind of traveling around and doing that. But during that time, I worked with my writing partner, George Tripsis, a whole bunch, and we figured out the format for Mind Fudge. Because he and I, like, we write the comic book together, so we'd go to conventions and stuff, and then we'd just sit there all day long and throw ideas back and forth, try to come up with different segments and what we wanted to cover on the show. And we came up with the basic premise for Mind Fudge, which we've kept so far for 32 episodes. And then, actually, the day we decided on the name Mind Fudge was the day that my friend Andy, who I hadn't talked to in like 5 years, told me that he was moving back down to my side of town. And I asked him if he'd be interested in trying out the show. He'd never podcasted before. He'd never done any kind of speaking or any kind of, you know, public kind of thing. And he was like, well, I'm a little reluctant, but sure, whatever. It's, you know, it sounds fun. And so he came over and we did a trial episode with the two of them because they'd never met before. And it actually ended up being really funny. And they got along great. And I get along great with both of them. And there's just a lot of humor, a lot of similar humor. And, you know, Mind Fudge became what it is. And it's been really successful so far.
Yeah, I can't say it enough. Like, I am genuinely a fan. I definitely push people to listen to your show. I love that you guys are like, you have like an overarching topic and then you also have really good segments within your show. Like, I love consumption. Every time you guys do that, I'm like, yes, what are we consuming this week, you know? Go ahead. Sorry.
No, Mind Fudge is kind of an amalgam of all the shows I've done. Because you remember I did a show called Just In Case Podcast that was solo show, and I would solicit questions from the audience and answer them every single week. And it was like all the best segments from all the shows I've ever done. Like, tell me a funny story, survived comical and made it to Mind Fudge, but now it's tell us something nutty. And then Ask the Nuts is basically the same segments from JIC, except I changed the name. And then I think it's funny that your show is Journey in the Comics and my show is Just in Case, because we both have JIC as our abbreviation.
I don't know if you know this or not, and this was something that was really hilarious and shocking to me. When we were switching over the Journey into Comics podcast to Journey into Comics Network on our social medias, we were on Twitter, and I typed in JIC pod, and your Twitter popped up, and I was like, oh my God, we had almost the exact same Twitter, and I never realized it. We were JIC podcast, but it never occurred to me. It just slipped my mind, you know? And then in that one moment, I was like, oh, damn. Well, at least now we're going to be a little bit different, you know?
Yeah. No, I realized that pretty early on. But it never really caused any confusion for our audience, I don't think, luckily.
Yeah, luckily. Now, I was going to say, you said there was a four-month time frame there while you were podcasting, or while you were in between podcasts, and you were filling in on shows. Was it kind of a relief to sit back and not have to like plan and do all the work that it takes to put into a podcast?
It was such a relief. I almost just, like, I wanted to have my own show, but I almost pushed it back just a couple more months just so I could enjoy, you know, sitting in, because when you sit in on shows, there's almost no prep. You just show up and talk. You know, you may have to read a couple of news articles or be a little bit versed on whatever you're going to talk about, but it's really just showing up and talking. But when you host a show, you know, there's so much more that goes into the planning of it and the editing of it and the production of it. And as much as I love that stuff, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's nice just to take a break.
Yeah, it's funny because there's only really like one or two shows I've ever done where I'm not the one in charge of anything. And it is always like a blast. I'm just like, cool, sit back and just enjoy this ride. And if the conversation has a lull, I don't have to worry about picking the ball back up and like trying to keep everything moving. That's not my job today. I can just be really relaxed.
It's refreshing. I think everybody that hosts a show should do it at least once, you know, sit on the other side of the table so they can see what it's like.
Yeah. And I think that helps you to also like, I know that there are people who podcast that have like really bad nerves about talking to people, even though the whole premise of podcasting should be talking or talking to an audience of people. So to me, it's just like, if I sit on the other side, I'm going to be able to just hang out, be reactionary to everything that's going on. I don't have to worry if there's technical issues with any of the equipment. I don't have to worry if there's a weird sound outside that I can't control. I'm along for this journey. Now, speaking of journeys, you have had a pretty interesting transformation. You went through a pretty big weight loss, right?
Yeah, I've lost about 90 pounds in the last, it's been about a year, I guess, now.
All right. Well, let's kind of get into that. What started the change mixed with what did you start to do differently that led you down the path you're down, 90 pounds down in a year?
Well, number one was not doing comical anymore. Comical was so time consuming. I can't really stress enough how time consuming it was. It was my entire life. Mind Fudge is work, but a lot of that stuff we come up with minutes before we actually record. Like, I posit questions to the internet and I get answers. And then really it's just about going through and finding the best ones and writing those down. And then right before we start, George and Andy and I discuss what we're going to talk about. So that freed up a whole bunch of time, and really I went to a bunch of conventions and I started seeing pictures of myself, and I really just wasn't happy with how fat I had gotten. Like, I really just sort of let myself go. I was pretty depressed for a while. Really just had a lot of personal stuff going on that really was affecting me, and I wasn't happy, and I was surrounded by too many toxic people, and started cutting those people out of my life, started just trying to make better choices and take care of myself a little bit better. And when it comes down to it, it was really just that I started eating less, or it wasn't even that I dieted. You know, I'm not the kind of person that can like stick to an all vegetable diet or like an all protein diet or anything, but you know, instead of eating a whole pizza, I would eat like two or three pieces and then save the rest, you know, or I would eat pizza once every 2 weeks instead of three times a week, you know? And, aside from that, a lot of time spent on the elliptical machine and the treadmill and, just working out. I worked out like at least an hour a night, usually walked 5 miles a night. And then cut back on what I was eating. Mostly it.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. It's good. I mean, it's weird because I totally can understand the situation of being clouded by toxic people and you kind of get lost in it. And I'm sure that, you know, at least from what you've been saying, comical is a very, I don't know if bogging you down is a good word, but it was like the more taxing second job that you have. And it consumed you in a way that, like, I'm sure you were like so focused, cause at least this is how I am. You were so focused on like, I want to make the show the best I can, that you got like literally lost in it.
That's true. I mean, and I had a lot of other side projects that I wanted to do as well. I mean, like I said, we started doing the comic book halfway through Comical's run. And that was very time consuming. George and I would meet twice a week and work on that. And we have other projects we're working on too that are coming up soon. And like I said, I had to read a ton of comic books every single week to keep up with the current cycle of books that come out. Because people that don't know comic books don't realize that, you know, there's 100 titles that come out every week. And like, if you want to be current on stuff, you need to be reading like at least 40 to 60 of them every single week. You really want to understand what the landscape of comic books looks like. So that's what I was doing. I was reading 60 comic books every Wednesday while having a full-time job that's 2 hours away from my house. So I would I would sleep, wake up, drive 2 hours, work all day, read as many comics as I could at work, drive 2 hours back home, eat, spend a little bit of time with my wife, read as many comics as I possibly could, start planning the show notes, go to George's, work on comic stuff, do other podcasts, because even while all this was going on, I was still being asked to be on a lot of other shows, and then work out when it was convenient or whenever I could. And it just got to be way too overwhelming.
Well, I'm sure it was definitely overwhelming. And at some point the wheels fall off, you know, and, you know, you said that everything kind of made its logical conclusion. You kind of get into mind, you're doing mind fudge, and you got to put yourself in a position where you felt better about yourself. You were in a better place mentally, and you were like, I'm going to just take care of myself the rest of the way. So it's really inspiring to hear a story of someone who has the willpower and the foresight within to try to better themselves. I'm terrible with diets, man. Honestly, I'm horrible with that.
Anybody can better themselves. I mean, really, it's just taking a look in the mirror, being self-reflective, and being able to commit to it. You know, it's all about willpower, and it's all about, you know, just telling yourself you're going to do it no matter what, and then sticking to it. You know, and you can't expect to change overnight. You can't be too hard on yourself if you don't see results immediately. You just got to, you know, gradually get there, figure out a plan, and stick to it.
Yeah, and I'm sure that, you know, I want to talk about this. I know that a lot of people who have gone through that change of, you know, I don't want to call it necessarily inactivity because I'm not sure what you do for your job, but
I work at a computer company, so I'm sitting all day long. Yeah.
So essentially, going from inactivity to being an active person, did you notice within a few short days that you had like big bursts of energy and you felt, you know, within that first X amount of time, a large difference just internally?
You know, people say that. People say that when you start working out, you just feel better, you feel more energetic or whatever. For me, it was kind of the opposite. I just felt even more tired all the time. But I don't have normal sleep schedules, and I still, like, when I say eating better, I mean eating less of garbage food. I don't mean eating fruits and vegetables like I should. So I'm still eating, like, garbage food, and, you know, I only sleep, like, 3 hours a night. So adding the exercise on top of that really just made me feel more exhausted. But I had more stamina for like long-term things, if that makes sense. Like I could go to a convention and be awake for, you know, 40 or 50 hours and not feel drained because of it.
Yeah. And that's gotta be crazy for you too, cause you guys have done lots and lots of cons. At least in the time that I've known you, I feel like you guys are like every couple weekends going to a con, it seems.
Yeah, we do a lot. It's been less this year because we've had so many things happen. but the previous couple of years, yes, we've done a whole lot. We go and do coverage for the shows. We also go as Grey Bear for the comic book and pitch that. And we've been doing really well with that. This year was supposed to be the big year for us to, you know, travel and go to like some out-of-state conventions and really push the comic even more. And it just sort of didn't happen. Like George lost his job at the beginning of the year, and it took him a little while to find a new one. And I'm going through a divorce now, which, you know, that put a weight on some things. And we really decided just to focus more on writing and working towards creating rather than trying to promote. And I think next year we're going to kind of refocus back to the promotional side of things and start traveling around and, you know, trying to sell the book more, trying to get more people familiar with it.
I think that we're in a point in this world where you almost have to like feel comfortable selling yourself overall. It isn't,
you do.
It isn't just like the product that you bring. It's like, hey, this is what I have to offer. This is who I am.
Well, you don't have to. Like, I think, see, you and I look at things as creatives because we create, but there's so many people that are just consumers and they're not interested in putting themselves out there. They're not interested in trying to, you know, see things from the other side of the table, as you will. But I think if you're any sort of creative, you have to develop some sort of sales persona for yourself, some sort of way to put yourself out there. And, you know, because you're a product yourself, you know, it's not just the comic book I'm selling. It's not just the podcast I'm selling. It's everything. You know, I'm a writer, I'm a creator, I do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, it's about networking. It's about making friends. It's about, you know, finding people with similar interests and helping each other promote and developing new ideas and new products. So, I mean, it's very much about networking more than anything.
Yeah, it's funny because today I was networking. I joined, you saw it because you accepted me into the group, but I joined some podcast group today. I was like, oh, cool, a group of people that do what I do. That's great. So I want to kind of continue into the podcasting thing a little bit more because we haven't talked about your other new show you have, Horror Geek. So yeah. How did that all come about? Because that's a part of a .com that's a different kind of thing, right?
Yes, it is. So when we did Speak No Evil, the first issue, I was shopping it around to a whole bunch of different websites trying to get reviews to try to help promote for the next Kickstarter. And HorrorGeekLife.com was one of the sites that did a review for us. And I kept in touch with the site owners and we became friends. And they were really looking for more people to write for the site. And I was talking to them and they were like, we need people to do movie reviews. Would you be interested? And, you know, I love movies. I'm a huge movie buff. And I had some free time, you know, somehow. And I was like, yeah, sure, you can send me screeners. So I was basically watching these like indie horror screeners for movies that hadn't come out yet and writing reviews for them. And I turned in my very first review and the head editor for the site looked at it and he was like, no changes. This is perfect. And then I turned in my second review and he was like, no changes again. This is perfect. And then they got back in touch with me and they were like, how would you feel about being an editor? Because you obviously know what you're doing grammar wise. So they hired me on as an editor for the site. And then we noticed a lot of other like horror genre sites creating podcast networks and trying to start up their own shows and things like that. And I started talking to them and really just sort of saying, you know, we should get on board with this. Podcasting is a great way to build a new audience, to drive more people to read the articles. And like both sides of it will feed into each other. So Melissa, who's my co-host on that show, she's the owner of the site. She and I became really good friends. And we talked a whole bunch about what we wanted the show to be. We had meetings. It's the same thing as Mind Fudge. You know, we really fleshed it out what we wanted it to be and came up with a format we liked and then just decided to do it. And she doesn't have as much podcasting experience as I do. She's done a lot of shows as a guest, but she doesn't have nearly the hosting experience. So when she said she wanted to take the lead and be the host on this, you know, like we talked about before, it's nice to do that sometimes instead of just the co-host or the guest and not have to do all the prep work. So I said, sure. And it's been kind of an interesting experience to watch her learn hosting as opposed to just being a guest.
Learning how to take over and kind of control the conversation as it goes along.
Yeah, because it's a completely different skill set. But she's done a really good job. And you, like, if you listen to every episode, you can tell she's getting better and better with each one. So, you know, we've only done 6 episodes so far, but the response has been really well, really, really good. People seem to like the show a lot. And, you know, I think it's just going to keep getting better and better. We have plans to have other guests on and have other writers from the site on. And we just kind of talk about, like, that week's horror news. And we talk about strange and bizarre news stories from around the world. We talk about the things that we enjoy that people may not know about, like independent recommendations we have. And it's just – it's a lot of fun. It's a really – it's a good short show. It's like 30 minutes usually versus Mind Fudge where it's about an hour. So it's just a really, really nice, fun, short, you know, 30 minutes in and out, get a couple laughs, learn what's going on sort of show. And I really enjoy it.
That's excellent. And like you said, it's fun to sit back. And do you help her any with, like, okay, if I was hosting, this is how I would do this? Or do you just, like, kind of just go, okay, no, I'm going to literally let her figure out her own voice?
That's asking how the sausage is made. Yeah, I do.
Well, that's fair.
You know. We have to edit out, you know, a lot of those moments where she's like, how would you say this? Or, you know, she gets stuck on a certain part where she's not sure what she should say or how she should phrase it. And then I'll just chime in and she'll be like, I don't want to just copy what you said, but that sounds really good. And then she'll just do it. So, but I mean, she's getting there. She's doing really good. She's only been doing this for 6 episodes and I think she's just crushing it.
That's awesome. It's weird. To side note, it's like I've said, I know you, but I don't really know you. And I was going through, like, some of the things you like on Facebook, and I found some interesting similarities to each other. And so I want to do some word association here for a minute. Okay. I'm going to say a thing, and I want to get your response, because these are the ones that stuck out to me, okay?
Okay.
So Trivium.
Metal.
Okay. Coheed.
Amazing.
Tool.
I like it.
Okay, Death Clock.
Nathan Explosion.
And Ghost.
I like Ghost.
Yeah.
It's not really a word association, but I'm a huge metalhead. I've been a metalhead since I was a kid. I like all that stuff.
Okay, that's a great segue. So where did you find metal? What was the first band that got you into the metal genre? And to kind of give our audience a little bit of the details sprinkled in here, when you say this was when you were a kid, are you talking about when you were growing up in Oklahoma, or is this after the move? Where does this go?
Well, let me take you back a little bit further even. Growing up, my mom was very opposed to us listening to any kind of modern music. We grew up listening to, like, soft rock and like the stuff that she grew up listening to. She was very controlling about what music we heard. And, like, I listened to a lot of Disney soundtracks as a kid. I wore out, like, my Beauty and the Beast music tape.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
When I got to be about 10 or so, I discovered alternative music and punk a little bit. And that was around the time that Offspring and Green Day were huge. And Smash was actually my first album that really sort of deviated from the norm for me. And still one of my favorite albums of all time. Like, it's such a good... I mean, Offspring's changed so much, but they were really good back then. And Nine Inch Nails, I discovered around the same time. And honestly, even though Nine Inch Nails isn't really metal, it's like more industrial sort of sounding, it was my gateway drug to harder stuff. And from Nine Inch Nails, I discovered Metallica. And then Metallica, I discovered Cold Chamber, Fear Factory sort of stuff. And then from there... it just kept getting more and more into the Swedish and Norwegian stuff. Like, I started listening to In Flames and Soilwork, and then I became a big fan of even heavier stuff, and I started listening to, like, Cradle of Filth. And then I really found my home in black metal. Like, I love Dimmu Borgir. I love Immortal, Emperor, all that kind of stuff. Mostly I listen to, like, a combination of melodic death metal and black metal. But that was kind of my progression.
Cool. So, you know, you progress. Do you play any musical instruments?
I play guitar badly.
Badly.
And I do metal vocals. I was actually in a band for about 8 months.
Ooh, let's talk about it. Sure.
Yeah, I was in a band called Texas Death Machine.
Love it.
And I was the front man, and I did some keyboard synth kind of stuff, and I would mix the tracks that we recorded. And I played a little bit of guitar, but like I said, badly. I fat fingers, so it's kind of hard. But mostly I did the vocals, and like I can scream really well. And yeah, I mean, we did that for about 8 months. We wrote about 10 songs. We played one real show and two like backyard party kind of things. And then our guitarist sort of turned out to be a dick, and the whole band just sort of imploded, and that was the end of it.
Do you have any aspirations? I know, I mean, I feel like I kind of know the answer because I feel like your plate is very full. But do you have any aspirations to go back in to do music?
From time to time, I think about it. I can't lie. Like, I really, like, I have such a passion for metal. I love it. I think I've grown a lot as a person who uses their voice, if that makes sense. Because I podcast so much, and I'm very aware of how I talk and, like, the pattern of conversation that people have. And I think that translates really well to, like, writing music. Because every once in a while, I'll still write songs. I think I would be better at it now than I was when I was in my 20s, but I also don't think I have the time for it.
Yeah, you're like, man, I really, really would love to do this, but no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, so I said that you were in Oklahoma. Now you live in Houston. When and how, why did that all change for you? And how was that being a 16-year-old that went from one part of the states to another? I know that's not a really, maybe not, it wasn't a long distance apart, but maybe it was. I don't know.
Yeah, you've been to Texas, right? Texas is tremendous.
I've actually never been to Texas, no.
Like, I could have driven twice the length of Oklahoma to get down to Houston. So wow. It's pretty far away. It was honestly like the best thing that could have happened to me. I was bullied pretty badly growing up as a kid. Oklahoma was not a very friendly state to me. I had a lot of troubles there, and my dad was in the oil industry. And, so he got, you know, he got transferred. Initially we lived in Oklahoma City, and that's where I had the most problems. And then when I was 14, we moved to Owosso, which is right outside of Tulsa. And, you know, Owosso was like pretty nice. It was just really small. It was like small town America. Everybody knew everybody. You know, the school was like the big thing in the city. There wasn't much to do there. And you know, it was okay, but we were only there for like a year and a half or so. And then we moved down to Houston when I turned 16. And, it's really funny because anybody you talk to that is not a native Texan and you ask them about what they thought when they moved to Texas, everybody has the exact same answer. I assumed I was going to come down here and everybody was going to be riding horses and wearing cowboy hats. And that's just how it was going to be. And I was going to have to adapt to that. And I'm, like I said, a metal kid. I just didn't want to like adopt some kind of country cowboy lifestyle. And it's true. Those things do exist down here, but they're not nearly as prevalent as they were in my 16-year-old mind. So yeah, I mean, I moved down when I was 16, and honestly, it was the best thing that could have happened to me. I made so many amazing friends when I moved down here, and I chose to stay in the city once I graduated. I went to college in Huntsville, which is just a couple hours north of Houston. And, you know, some of the best people I know live here. So I love living here.
And look how it all sets everything in motion, because that's where you started podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you started finding, you know, your partner in writing comics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird how that works. You know, it's like, I am a firm believer of that. Everything does happen for a reason.
I used to not be for such a long time. I was not. But there's just been so many things that have like spawned off of like random coincidences that I can't deny that anymore. Kerry Gordon, the host of the Metal Geeks and MSR Cast podcast, we had started Comical and we were looking to participate in Comic Palooza, which is like the big convention here in Houston. The guy who runs Comic Palooza used to own Midnight Comics, which is the comic shop I used to go to all the time. So I knew him. So I knew there wasn't going to be any kind of trouble getting in as press and doing coverage, even though we were a new show, even though we didn't have an experience. I knew they were going to treat us right, you know?
Yeah.
But Kerry, he saw me posting on Facebook on some random forum about an event that was happening in a comic book shop locally regarding Comic Palooza. And he was like, oh, you do podcasts. I'm a podcaster too. Come by and say hi. So I went and I met Kerry. And at first, you know, we got along, but we weren't like fast friends or anything. Then we ran into each other again about 2 months later, and then we started talking about metal, and then we really sort of formed a friendship. And because of Carrie, I met George, who became my writing partner. Because of Carrie, I became one of the linchpins of the podcasting community here in Houston. And like, I mean, Carrie and me and a couple of other guys really kind of are the guys that started the Houston Nerdcasting Collective. We're the guys that started the podcasting group on Facebook. We're the guys that organized the Comic Palooza podcast partnership. You know, there's like a small group of us that really just sort of bring everybody together. I feel like we're the linchpins of the community. But without meeting Carrie in that one random event, like my best friend I never would have met because of him. I never would have partnered up with George. I never would have started writing the comic. I never would have moved on to Mind Fudge. It's just like this one random guy who saw me on Facebook ended up, you know, spawning off all these other things. So it is really funny how life works out.
That's a very bizarre journey that you had. But you're right. It is funny how life works out because you never expect it. Like, in the moment when you met Carrie, you probably didn't go, oh, this moment's going to change my whole life. But in retrospective, you're like, whoa, holy shit. Yep. Like, yeah. It is very bizarre. I feel like that I call them people of destiny. I feel like have that literal fate trait where they are at least within themselves enough to look at their situation and recognize it for what it is, because it's one thing if it's a random coincidence here or there, but when it's consistent, like, you can't ignore it. There's no way.
That's true.
Like, you just very can't, true. You can't look at it and just be like, okay, whatever, it's whatever. Well, okay, so we're talking about you and moving to Houston and all the great things that have happened. I would be remiss if I didn't say that there have been some not so cool things recently that have happened in Houston, and that's kind of why we're here today. So you put a call out on Facebook. Was that last week, Thursday, I think?
Yeah, last week.
Sometime, right? Looking for podcasters to participate in a podcast pack. Now, I'm going to let you tell everybody really kind of what the podcast pack is about. That way, I'm not at fault for messing up any of the details. So go ahead and take it away, man. Just let people know kind of what that is, and then we're going to kind of get into some other stuff that spawns off of that.
Okay, so Hurricane Harvey just happened, and Houston was devastated in a lot of different parts of the city. And I know a lot of podcasters that were directly affected by it. A lot of people that had flooding, a couple of people that actually lost their homes. And I wanted to do something to help. And, like, I'm extremely busy, so it's hard for me to find time to go down and volunteer the way other people do. I couldn't really go and hang out at the George R. Brown and sort out, you know, donations all day. But I did go and help a few, you know, of my actual friends, like clean all the dirt and debris out of their houses and tear up carpeting and drywall and that sort of thing. But what I really wanted to do to help the community was find some way to do it through podcasting. And my friend Mandy, who is the host of the Caster Quest podcast, she told me about this idea that she had seen online for a podcast pack. She hasn't been podcasting quite as long as I have. She doesn't have all the connections I have, but she thought of something I could maybe, you know, be the lead on and get this thing to go. So what it is we wanted to involve as many shows as we possibly could to record exclusive episodes that are only going to be available as part of this podcast pack. And right now we have over 50 shows that are committed to this. It might actually be closer to 75, but I don't have everybody's shows turned in yet, so I can't give you an exact number. But it's at least 50 shows that are a part of this thing. And every single one of those shows has recorded an exclusive episode that's only available through this Hurricane Harvey podcast pack. And it's going to be up on Indiegogo starting on the 12th for $10 to get the podcast pack. A lot of your favorite shows will be there with an exclusive episode. But you'll also get everybody else's exclusive episode. So you'll have the opportunity to discover new shows, to find other things you may like. And there's no maximum amount you can pledge. Like, $10 is the minimum to get the pack, but you can give as much as you'd like. And what's going to happen is after all that money's collected, 25% of it's going to go to help local Houston podcasters who have been affected by the floods, who have lost their houses, and that sort of thing. And then 75% of it's going to go to help Mayor Turner's Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, which is doing different things throughout the city to help. But it'll stay in Houston, and it'll stay in and help people that are actually displaced because of Hurricane Harvey.
Man, as soon as you put that out there, I was like, I want to be a part of this in some way. And I thought, what better way than to interview you, the guy who's putting it on himself? Like, It just made sense to me. And you're such an interesting character. You have so many things going on. So within doing the podcast pack, you've got shows across all kinds of different genres and different mediums. And it's funny because you were just talking about how you're like the linchpin of the Houston community. And here you are stepping up to the plate and really saying, hey, look, we're going to do this right. I'm not giving my money to some organization that maybe not give a lot of it back to what's really going on in Houston. And you know firsthand what's going on because you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I wanted to ask within this, if you don't mind me asking, is how were you affected by this hurricane and what did you experience through this? Because I can honestly say, man, I've never been south long enough to be a part of something like that. And, you know, the worst experience in my life is pretty much just snow. So, you know, that it really doesn't compare. There's no comparison.
Well, luckily, I was very fortunate. I live in a part of the town which is kind of southwest of everything, and we're up on a big hill. We did get street flooding. You know, I was trapped at the house for like 3 days. I couldn't really go to work, and I lost power for maybe 8 or 10 hours one day. But aside from that, I wasn't really affected. My cars were fine. My house was fine. I was fine. I had food. I had water. It was an inconvenience more than anything for me. But for a lot of other people, it was life-changing. You know, people's houses got washed away, tornadoes were spawned and just completely obliterated everything they owned. Even smaller damages, like George, my co-writer and my co-host, his house flooded. He had about 3 feet of water come up. There was a levee near his house that busted, and then the Coast Guard showed up and said, you have like 15 minutes to evacuate, get whatever you can, we got to go. And he said within that 15 minutes, the water rose from just being on the street to like being in his house, like a foot deep. And he was just grabbing everything he could that, you know, they could carry, and they ran out of there. And, you know, for the last few days, I've been over at his house, like helping him pull up carpet and, you know, cut down drywall that got wet and pull up baseboards and all that sort of thing. So I've seen the damage that it can do, you know, and he wasn't even the worst of it. I have other friends that lost everything. His cousin lost everything. His entire house washed away. So it's bad. It's really bad. Like, there's parts of the city that have it really, really bad. And like I said, I was very fortunate not to be one of those people. Most of the people that I knew really well didn't get affected too badly. Like, people had leaks, people lost some shingles, you know, they may have had minor flooding, but there was only a handful of people that I'm super close to that lost a lot. But the people that did lose a lot lost a lot. You know, cars are gone, houses are gone, and like flood insurance is not a thing that everybody has here in Houston. Because even though parts of the city do flood, there are other parts that don't, not very often at least. And it's very, very expensive. After Hurricane Ike a couple years ago, the rates went through the roof. So a lot of people just declined to get it for their house because it was so expensive. And now, you know, this disaster has happened and they're left with nothing but relying on FEMA for help. So I want to do what I can to help the people that I know who are struggling or who lost, you know, a lot of their possessions because of this.
Well, I'm sure they appreciate it. So I got to ask within what's going on. It also makes things more difficult, and you'll know this better than I will, so correct me if I'm misspeaking at all here, but wasn't there a law that went into effect like September 1st that affected insurance claims for natural disasters?
Yes. You had to have your, okay. So it didn't make it so you couldn't file, but it made the requirements for getting approved for through your insurance for, coverage much harder. Like, it made the requirements for actually getting money back much more difficult. So a lot of people tried to file before September 1st to make sure that the old statutes actually applied. I don't think that it is going to affect anybody that didn't lose everything. But the people that did lose everything, hopefully they got their insurance claims in before that law change happened.
Yeah, and it's weird because you would think that they would delay. Like, okay, I know typically our law is going to affect September 1st. Every fiscal year, but like, here's a real disaster that's happened and a real terrible thing that's happened, and people are struggling and hurting. You would think there would be some people out there that are trying to fight the good fight, as it were. But this has got to be just it sucks too, because now you guys in Texas are sitting here watching what's about to happen in Florida. And just having gone through it, and I saw a picture, man, from Texas, from Houston, that was one of your guys' major roadways, and it was all these cars just washed over to one side.
There's a lot of places in town like that.
I mean, it looked like it looked like The Walking Dead, man.
Yeah, it really does. There's a lot of places in town that still have, you know, 6 feet of water. I know that the trucks are supposed to be going out in the next couple of days to try to suck it up so that the roads can reopen. Traffic has been horrible. It took me 4 hours to get to work yesterday. It took me 3.5 hours today. You know, because there's only one way to go north now.
Oh, gosh. And everybody's going that way for work.
Yeah. So. And I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. You just got to suck it up and deal with it. Luckily, you know, Houston has really banded together. People have come out of the woodwork to help each other. Companies are taking care of their employees and not holding that against them if they come in late. You know, like people that couldn't make it to work. My company, which is, you know, historically not a company that really cares about disasters and stuff and doesn't really take care of their employees particularly well, they gave us coverage for the days that we missed when we were flooded in. So, like, I actually got paid for those days without having to use vacation time, which was nice. So, I mean, it's everybody's really stepping up and trying to take care of everybody in Houston. And it's been really incredible to see the outpouring from the community, not just the podcast community, but everybody trying to take care of each other.
Yeah. You know, and another thing is, I'm sure that on the other side, and you'll probably know this better, there's probably some pretty great benefit music acts and shows getting put together.
I would assume. I'm aware of at least two or three of them that are being done. Carrie, who I mentioned before from Metal Geeks and MSR Cast, he's working with Comic Palooza to try to put one together. I don't have any details, and I can't really tell you guys for sure if it's going to happen, but we know a whole bunch of different music acts, you know, from all of our different ventures here, and he's trying to put one together for that as well. It's going to be like a silent auction slash concert series sort of thing, so that'd be a lot of fun. It's just everybody that's creative type is really stepping up and trying to, you know, do what they can to help too, which is awesome. There's so many amazing people that live in this city, and I'm very fortunate to know so many of them.
And they're honestly, dude, they're fortunate to know you, because again, in this dark moment, you're this beacon of light. You're making sure that you're finding a way. I mean, I don't mentally think I could handle like watching my city have something like that happen and then knowing what the smartest next move would be. And I feel like you went to a place that you were, you know really well, you know, podcasting, and you said, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. You got an idea from your co-host and you ran with it. I'm excited to see all the people that end up participating in this.
I am too. And, you know, I figured it was a shot in the dark. Worst that could happen is I only get like 10 or 15 shows involved. Hopefully we still make a few $100 and we're still able to help somebody. But we've had so many shows that wanted to sign up, and it's just every single day I'm still getting people that are like, hey, can we still participate? And I'm just like, yeah, please, the more the merrier. We want as many shows as we possibly can get in on this. And because, I mean, that's entirely new audiences to get involved on this thing as well. You know, projected, we could make a few $1,000 and really help some people. So I'm hoping that's what happens.
I'm very hopeful too. And it's nice too, because the one thing I love about podcasters, and at least I haven't found any, hopefully you're not going to be like, well, Nate, I can actually tell you there are people like this that you're speaking on. But I feel like the podcast community is very loving to each other. Like, very accepting.
Well, Nate, let me tell you.
Oh, no.
No, I think in general you're right. There's a lot of support and a lot of love between the shows. There are a few that think they're better than other people. They're very egotistical. They don't associate themselves with us commoners. Nobody that's actually part of Potter and Family would ever get, you know, any kind of love from these other shows unless it benefited them. There are some snobs, you know, but I think that's true with any community. But in general, the podcast community is just a great place to be.
I totally agree with you. Now, I'm going to riff off of that. I was talking to the girlfriend the other day, and we kind of thought about it. and I wanted to bring it to a fellow podcaster who's in the community deep. Do you think right now we are in the golden age of podcasting? And I want to preface that question by mentioning these few little bullet points. Right now, podcasts are still unregulated. There's no one telling us what we can or cannot say. There's no worry about censorship. And you can be as creative and as freeform as you want, and no one's really going to give you a lot of shit for it. And I also think that right now is a point in time where podcasts are really starting to boom. So I wanted to throw this question your way of, are we in the golden age of podcasting, do you think?
I think it's hard to say golden age because that implies there's going to be ages that are worse. I don't think that podcasting is ever going to be a thing that's heavily regulated. I mean, even if iTunes is like, we're changing it so you have to do X, Y, or Z or not have explicit lyrics or whatever. Even if that happens, people will just move along to a different platform to promote their stuff. At its core, podcasting is a very independent sort of medium anyways, very much like a pirate radio sort of thing. So I'm not sure golden age is the right moniker for that, but I do think we're in the podcast boom. I do think this is the genesis of what's to come. And I do think that there's a lot of, you know, great movements going on right now, and shows are really pushing to like get the word out there. And like for such a long time, you know, I think the statistic is something like 10% of the population even knows what a podcast is. With things like Serial coming out and with comedians like Marc Maron and Adam Carolla becoming more popular and, you know, getting their audiences bigger, and Joe Rogan, I think those shows are really driving more people to discover podcasts and to figure out, you know, what podcasting really is, and then find out that there are podcasts about literally anything they could ever want to hear about. I definitely think we're in the boom, but I don't think golden age is the right terminology.
Well, now that you've said we're in the boom, I totally agree with that sentiment. And I think that makes more sense to what I was trying to elaborate upon. Because and of course I'm talking from a place of comics because that's what I know, you know.
I do too.
But I wouldn't necessarily say that the golden age of comics is like full blown golden, because in the silver age there's really some real gold, you know. But
yeah, you're absolutely right. But I mean, then you get stuff like the 90s. I mean, hopefully we never have a 90s of podcasting.
Oh my god, that would be awful. There's like just every person on. Just imagine every single person on your friends list doing a podcast. But it's
the same thing.
But it's not really well thought out.
None of them have feet because Rob Liefeld drew them all.
Oh no. Yeah. I was gonna say something. I was gonna add something, and I can't. My brain is all fucking weird sometimes. Okay, I have more things that we have in common that are interesting, and I don't really necessarily want to play word association, but I do want to talk a little bit about some of the TV shows you watch, and these are the ones that stuck out to me as well. Good hot topics of things we can converse upon. So I wanted to ask you on here, you have that you like Dexter. I'm assuming that you're a sane person and only are referring to the first 7 seasons and the 8th season never happened.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I clicked like on that sometime around season 3.
Awesome. Yes, the Miguel season. That's John Ramsey's in that season as Anton goes on.
It's hard to say I'm a fan of the show after it had the worst finale of any show ever.
Oh, yeah.
But the first few seasons were really, really good.
Yeah, man, I think that, honestly, I think up to season 6 was special. I will say season 5 is maybe the worst of the not finale season seasons of Dexter. But in that same vein, you said it was the worst finale. Let's talk about what could be arguably the best finale. What about Breaking Bad?
I think Breaking Bad is the only show I've ever watched where every episode, with the exception of the last, is better than the episode before it, which is just an astonishing thing to even say. Like, episode 2 is better than episode 1, episode 3 is better than episode 2, and so on and so forth, until you get to the last episode, which is really good, but it's not quite as good as the episode that came before it.
Oh, no way.
The next to last episode of Breaking Bad is probably the best episode of TV ever made.
Was that Ozymandias?
Yes.
Yo, that's when the literal shit hits the fan and there's no turning back.
Yeah. In my opinion, Breaking Bad is the best TV show ever made. It's nearly a perfect show. It was built for five seasons. It ran for five seasons. There was not a lot of extraneous content. There was almost no filler. Everything that happened had a reason to happen. I love that show. I've watched the entire thing like four times.
Hell yeah. Do you watch Saul as well, Better Call Saul?
Yeah. Yeah, I like Better Call Saul. It's not quite as good, but I love Bob Odenkirk. And, you know, I think it's still really solid.
Yeah, and I will say that I'm only like three episodes into season three of Better Call Saul. But one thing I love about that show is they do a really good job of sprinkling little hidden gems. And they like drop people that you already know from that universe into it. And it's so impactful. Like, I feel like the age of dropping an Easter egg or doing a sly cameo because, you know, somebody was loosely associated with something many years before it can kind of become contrived. But I feel like that's one thing that Better Call Saul does really well, cleverly reintroducing characters we already know and love.
Yeah, I agree with that. But Vince Gilligan is really, really good at that. And I think I'll probably watch anything that he creates from this point forward just because of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, you got to give him that ultimate trust level when he does that. So let's get kind of go a little bit further back, and we're going to try. Okay, what I want to try with you now, Justin, is something that we may not come back from, my friend. Right now on the Voice of Survival podcast, I want to briefly talk about your journey into comics, but I don't want to turn this into full-blown journey into comics, so we're going to try to tread as lightly but as in-depth as possible, if that makes sense.
I'll do what I can.
So where does comic book reading start for you within this? I mean, I can only envision like a 15-year-old Justin sitting with headphones listening to music with a comic book in hand.
It was actually way before then. I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and we used to go to KB Toys all the time at the mall, and they used to have those spinner racks that would just have 4 packs or 6 packs of comics for like a dollar. And I would go there all the time, and I would beg my mom to get me comic books, and so she would. And, you know, most of them were garbage comics. They were, like, indie stuff that wasn't great, like Pied Piper or DN Agents or things like that. But every once in a while, I'd get, like, a Marvel or DC book, and, you know, those were the great ones to get. And so one of the first books that I remember getting that I really and truly loved was X-Force number 2, which is the second appearance of Deadpool. And I loved Deadpool from the very first time I read a page that had him on it. He cracked me up back then, and he's cracked me up ever since. I'm a huge Deadpool fan, but I mean, from there I went on to reading X-Men. X-Men's always been my favorite franchise in comics. I had some Batman comics, and I love those as well. But I mean, like I said, I wasn't buying cream of the crop stuff. Most of what I got was like Magnus Robot Fighter and Predator comics. Which, you know, they're a mixed bag.
Yeah, you might get a little bit of a decent story out of a Predator comic, but you're not going to get consistency.
Right.
So where does that change for you? And you decide, like, I mean, as you're growing up, you probably grew to love multiple characters. You loved comic books to a point where you started your own podcast about it, and I know what that's like.
Well, I was also really into trading cards. You know, I played Magic, and I liked baseball cards and things like that. So when Topps used to do the Marvel Universe cards, I would really try to collect all of those. And I could get those at Walmart or Target whenever we went. So I would ask my mom for those, and I would save up money and buy those. And I collected the entire set of the Fleer Ultra X-Men first series and all of the Marvel Universe cards. And like I learned about all the characters really before I read about any of them, you know, because they had the stats for them on the cards. The first crossover series that I ever bought was the Executioner's Song. And it was like a 12-part series across all the different X titles. And it was like so hard to get my hands on all of them because my parents would not take me to the comic book shop. I could only buy stuff if I could find it at, you know, KB or at like the mall or Walmart or Target, or if I could trade friends for it. So I spent a lot of time trading baseball cards and trading Magic cards and trading video games even for comic books from friends. And I built myself a nice little collection, mostly X-Men stuff. Nothing too valuable, but just stuff I really enjoyed reading. And then one day when I was a little bit older, for my birthday, because I'd done really well at school, my dad took me to the comic shop and let me kind of have free rein. And I bought a ton of stuff that I wanted. And ever since then, I've been kind of a more serious collector, and just I walked away from it for a little while. Like, I focused more on gaming and things like that, but I came back to it because it was one of my first loves. And a couple times in my life, my habit has gotten way too expensive and I've had to quit cold turkey, but I always come back to it.
Okay, you said we're going to tangent here within the tangent. Games, what kind of games? Video games, tabletop games, both?
I love video games, but I never played competitively video game wise. I have a lot of friends that are MLG players, and I would practice with them. I was never quite at their level because I didn't have the time to devote to it. But mostly what I played was Magic because I was very good at that, and poker because I was very good at that, and it was lucrative. I would travel around for both of those all over. Like, once I had my driver's license, I traveled all over Texas for both of those.
Well, I mean, you had the freedom to do so.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, it seems like you did pretty good in Magic. It wasn't like you were an all-star, but, God, that's such a hard thing to even break into, I'm sure.
The way that Magic used to work is that there would be Pro Tour qualifiers you would go to, and there'd be 300, 400 people that showed up, and you'd have to win one in order to actually go to the Pro Tour. And the thing is, there'd be one slot. You actually had to win the tournament to get an invitation. And I went to hundreds of them. You know, I probably went to 200 of them before I finally won one. And I must have had 28, 29 second place finishes before I finally won one.
Wow, that's a lot of seconds.
It's devastating. It was so hard, and it was so vindicating when I finally did win one.
Well, that's one of those things, like, you must have felt kind of like Leo DiCaprio, because you were right there, you should have won, you probably deservingly could have won, and then it just kept not happening for you, so then it, like, becomes obsession, and then the obsession almost becomes, like, what's wrong with me, why is it on me? But then, like you said, you get this great vindication of being a winner. You move on to the Pro Tour, what's that like?
It's a pretty significant jump in quality of player. But at the same time, it's much easier to prepare for because everybody is so predictable, I guess, at a professional level. Like, you won't see just junk. You'll see people that are well-prepared, and you kind of know what the best cards are in formats, and you can prep for it a little bit easier. So I always did fairly well at Pro Tour events. There was only one where I didn't make day two. But of the five or six that I played in, I made day two at almost all of them except for one, and finished in the money twice. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I loved that. I did really well at poker. I loved poker. I used to play online before that got banned. I actually paid for my last couple semesters of college from poker. Paid off my first car with poker. I loved poker.
And look, hey, that's really weird. That's another interesting tie. Now, I wasn't specifically a real poker dealer, but I actually was a casino blackjack dealer. And had had a lot of friends in that industry. So, mad respect, man. Poker is not, that's a hard fucking thing to do, especially if you went to any, like, live tournaments.
Oh, I used to play live tournaments all the time. I actually had diamond card status at Harrah's down in Lake Charles. So, we would drive down there every single weekend and get comped hotel rooms and comp food and just play poker for, like, 20 or 30 hours straight every single weekend when I was in college.
You know what's funny? I won't say this on air, but I know the kind of money that goes into getting a diamond status at Harrah's, because our casino is Harrah's as well. So props to that, man. That's awesome. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. It's just my friend Taylor and I. We were addicted to it, and we were pretty good at it. And then I made some bad decisions later on, and I ended up not being responsible with my bankroll and sort of went bust. But, you know, it happens.
You live and you learn, man.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's just the way it goes. Well, Justin, I think we're getting... Oh, you know what? We could, I mean, if you want, we could talk a little bit about Game of Thrones. I noticed you also like that. Are you a part of the people that believe this season's writing was bad, or are you on the side of the fence where it was still pretty awesome?
It was predictable, but it was well executed.
Yeah, that was brief, but perfectly summed up.
I'm a fan of the books. I've read all of Song of Ice and Fire about six times. I loved the books way before the TV show even came into existence, and I've been waiting for the next chapter for so long. So it was nice to see, you know, a continuation of the story, even if it's not actually what's going to happen in the books. And I'm one of those people that thinks the books is, you know, the true story more so than the TV show in many ways.
Well, and the books have a lot more character and a lot more character detail. And I feel like there are some characters that got lost from the book. And I haven't read the books yet, but I have studied a little bit on Game of Thrones. But like, there's so many things that the books cover and characters they have that weren't introduced to the show. Like Lady Stoneheart, how do you not introduce her? Like,
yeah, I kept wondering when she was going to show back up, but I mean, they never did it.
A total underutilization of that actress's talent.
Which, you know, the Littlefinger thing that happened this season, I can imagine that's going completely different in the actual books because she's a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's weird. And then also, like we were talking on, one thing I really want to see, and because you've read the books, you'll know about this, I'm hopeful that when Game of Thrones ends, we get to have a prequel and get to witness Robert's Rebellion, like fully.
We've been talking about that. I think they're working on that, actually.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. That would be cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. So you are, as we said, you got into comics when you were a kid and reading the books and getting them when you could. And, you know, you loved X-Men, X-Force. Mutants are awesome, obviously. Who's your favorite mutant?
Deadpool, if you classify him as one, which he's not, I guess. It's a hard question. I've always been hero or villain. Who do you want to know?
Okay, let's go one and one. One hero, one villain.
It was Wolverine for a really long time, but then he got oversaturated.
Oh my gosh, there's way too much Wolverine. I totally understand.
I like Phantom X a lot. I like Archangel a lot. I like Daken. I like Psylocke. I'm very fond of Psylocke. Havoc is really good.
Alex Summers.
That's like five good guys. Bad guys, I like Omega Red. I've always been a big fan of Omega Red. He's very underused. I like Blob, actually. He's been weird sometimes in the way they've written him, but other times he's just so good. Like Remender's X-Force run, he was incredible. I don't know, pretty much anybody that was in the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Pyro was good at times. Archangel was good at times. Apocalypse is pretty messed up. Not the movie version, but the comic version.
Yeah, the movie version, I didn't hate it, but it just wasn't quite what I was expecting.
Yeah, I agree.
Left a little to be desired, I think. But so let's continue on down the path a little bit. What was the spark that led you to make the decision to start writing your own comics?
It's something that I've wanted to do for a long time. Like, I love writing, and I had a story I wanted to tell, and I was working on it. And, it was a story about a brother who got possessed and ended up killing his entire family. And there's a detective that's trying to track him down years later. Didn't actually finish that story. Like, I've got the outline, but I never actually wrote it. While I was working on that, George approached me with the idea for Speak No Evil. And he had initially wanted to do that as a movie, but he couldn't afford to do it as a movie. And I told him maybe you could do it as a comic. But he had no idea how to write a comic. So he approached me and asked me if I'd help him with it. And we totally changed the story, changed which characters were involved. We just took the basic premise and then really fleshed it out. And we've been working on that ever since. And it's been really well received. So I'm so happy that people like it.
You're on issue four, issue four, five?
Issue three, the Kickstarter was funded back in March, February. We're still working on issue three right now. Our colorist had some personal issues come up and she got a little bit behind on stuff, but we're expecting hopefully like mid-October we'll be done with the book, and then we'll be launching the Kickstarter for issue four towards the end of the year.
That's awesome, man. I need to, at some point soon, throw you some money and catch up because I'm way behind on your Speak No Evil story. I still have only read issue one several times over. So,
oh, you haven't even read the revised issue one.
Oh my gosh, you revised it?
Yeah, we did a director's cut version of issue one, which is way better. I'll send you the PDF copies of issue one and two.
Oh, sweet. Thank you. That'd be much appreciated. Then we can fully re-review them on Journey into Comics.
Awesome.
Podcast. Well, before we get out of here, I'm going to open the floor up. I always do this. And I'm just going to let you kind of riff. Is there anything else you want to add to this today about yourself? Is there anything within what your, you know, podcast pack is doing and any of the things you want to talk about? The floor is open to you now to just kind of move around and talk about what you want to talk about.
I'd really like just to remind people to go to the Indiegogo campaign and support the Hurricane Harvey podcast pack. That's what it's going to be titled as. If you can, there's a lot of great shows involved and there'll be a lot of exclusive episodes you can check out, and please listen to more than just this one. You know, so you can maybe discover some other shows that you might like. Check out Mind Fudge if you'd like to. That's available at mindfudgecomedy.com or on iTunes, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere. If you'd like to check out our comic, Speak No Evil, it's available at graybearcomics.com. That's G-R-A-Y. Or you can find it on Comixology. And if you'd like to check out the Horror Geek podcast, it's available at horrorgeeklife.com or also on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, all those places. And if you like them, leave me a review.
Awesome. Well said, man. Well, Justin, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been a really cool episode. It was nice to catch up with you. Nice to learn a little bit about you, I think.
Yeah, definitely, man. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem. As always, folks, you can check out the Voice of Survival podcast on all the different social media platforms. Facebook at the Voice of Survival podcast. Twitter at Voice of Survival. On Instagram, Voice of Survival podcast. That's really the only things I've got going right now. Check out all the other Journey into Comics Network shows at journeyintocomics.com. If you want to get early access to all of the shows on the network, throw us a dollar at our Patreon. You get early access. You want exclusive content, some of the stuff we don't put on the regular feed. Give us $3. We'll give you that exclusive content, at least one episode every month. That's all I've got this week for the Voice of Survival podcast. Again, Justin, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, this was the Voice of Survival. Later.